and welcome to Star Wars Sleepover, a laid-back exploration of the captivating and sometimes ridiculous galaxy far, far away. I'm Europa Tokani, and I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, I'm Loya Rowan, and for this week, we both read the wonderful Leia, Princess of Alderaan by Claudia Gray. We'll be discussing a love interest who enjoys reenacting clone scuba troopers, grim Alderaan foreshadowing, politics, pathfinding, the Force, Holdo, heart, lungs, and through it all, Leia. Let's do this.
It is time now for Cantina Corner. As always, Loya and I each chose a Star Wars themed cocktail to enjoy during our sleepover. And because I previously chose a cocktail that was actually called the Princess Leia, I could not reuse that one. And I had to find another vaguely Leia-themed drink since we are discussing Leia, Princess of Alderaan. So I went with the Leia Fine Apple from the Daily Meal. And as is just my MO, apparently, I substituted one of the three ingredients of the drink because it was something that I don't personally enjoy, which is sparkling ice. Did not use sparkling ice. I substituted that for coconut LaCroix. And so my drink is coconut LaCroix, Malibu, so coconut white rum, and pineapple juice.
Sounds fun.
So I'm thinking it will probably be delicious. I also did put a little bit of nutmeg on the top because that was suggested. And that is like a common tiki drink type of thing. So
what? I did not know that.
I'm guessing it's going to kind of taste like a pina colada, except not creamy, which is exciting because I like pina coladas. So I am going to try it.
I don't think I've ever had a pina colada. God, that's weird.
It's really good. It is like a pina colada, but not heavy like a pina colada would be. But it like still has that flavor. And it has like nice effervescence from the LaCroix, so I would definitely recommend it.
I'm gonna have to make this. Not that I have Malibu, but I can definitely acquire it.
All right, Loya, what did you make for today's episode?
So I was going to make an R2-D2 milkshake, which I will make at a later point. It required specialty ice cream that I like would have to track down. So I found something else. On the website Stress Free Baby, there's a list of food and drinks for a Star Wars party, and it looks like they just went to a Star Wars event that I think was hosted by Disney and just took pictures of the menu. She had cocktails. Like, this looks like an amazing event. Small plates.
I'm
like
curious now. I have to go look at this.
Yeah. The dark fried crispy chicken and mini Darth Vader waffles served with maple syrup and barbecue sauce.
Okay,
I'm at this party.
I'm on the website now, and the first thing I saw was the Darth Maul dip.
Yeah,
and I know for a fact that that was something that was served at Disney World during Star Wars weekends. Not even when I went, like prior to that, but I've seen it before.
Okay, yeah, she says Disney's Hollywood Studios features a variety of apps, snacks, and beverages.
So I don't know if it was like an event, like a one day event. I think this is Star Wars weekends. Like, these were special things that were available during Star Wars weekends.
Well, I'm very sad to have missed all of this. So I
even think this is like ridiculous. Yeah. But I'm looking at one of the photos, the one that says Choose Your Planet, that has the Mustafar and the Tatooine cocktail. But that logo, like the Star Wars logo that's cut off at the bottom, that's specifically the Star Wars weekend.
Oh, you can see it in the one below where it's this, you can see like I picked the Alderaan and like underneath it says Star Wars weekends. So yeah, it's from Star Wars weekends. I made the Alderaan. It is supposed to be Bacardi Black Raz rum, blue curacao, cranberry juice with a Death Star glow cube, which is kind of grim. I did not have rum because I don't usually drink rum drinks, so I just used bourbon instead. I was debating between like tequila and bourbon. I went with the bourbon, as a result, my drink is not very purple. So when I posted it on Instagram, I didn't even really bother featuring the drink. The highlight was the Death Star ice cube, which did turn out this time. So we'll see how this tastes with whiskey in lieu of the rum. It's delicious. I mean, you really can't go wrong. A little bit of orange, a little bit of cranberry, actually a lot of cranberry, and then whiskey at the bottom. And now time for the Mouse Droid segment. I did get a chance to read the red one from a certain point of view. If you haven't read that story, read that book, spoilers, you can skip ahead. This won't take long. I would anticipate a few moments, a few minutes.
Simply moments.
I was so glad that you didn't like tell me what happens at our last episode, because it was so good. And also, as I mentioned, I was listening to our older episodes, and I listened to the one on droids. And so it just like perfectly tied in. I just feel so justified. Seriously, droids are sentient. This little red droid sacrifices his, thankfully there was a happy ending, but like he sacrifices his chance to go to Luke's family. Also, R2-D2 can like fulfill his mission. It was profound.
It was very profound.
And he was talking like, I had my memory wiped 4 years ago. And like, he was talking about how he was slowly running out of lubrication and he was dying. It was very sad. And then he eventually like, you know, forged ahead because the Sandcrawler was destroyed by the Empire.
Well, then it was also implied too, that the reason he knew that he had to intervene and allow R2-D2 to be the one that was chosen was because, like, he
was involved.
Well, also, like, how would he know that? Like, he had some connection to the Force.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a droid.
I thought he was, like, one of his previous owners had been involved with the Rebellion, and he was, like, having, like, trickles of memory despite his memory wipe, like an imperfect memory wipe. And it was kind of bubbling up. That was my theory.
I don't know. That's my impression.
I mean, I could see it being open to interpretation, right?
So other than that, we do have a couple of brief news items that are announcements of some Star Wars things that are coming out over, well, I was going to say the next few months, but one of them isn't coming out for like 8 months.
And oh, okay.
That would be, it was announced that E.K. Johnston is writing a third Padme novel, which, if you know us, we are super excited about. We love E.K. Johnston. I just am so impressed still by the way that she just totally fleshed out the character of Padme for me and got me so interested in The Handmaidens, and I'm very excited to read the continuation of their story, especially because it's going to focus on the period where Padme is married to Anakin. And in our episode on Queen Shadow, we probably spent like a third of the episode being like, where was Sabe? What was she doing?
Yes.
And so now we'll find out. So that is planned to be released in November. And cool. Then there was also an announcement of the official premiere date for The Bad Batch, which is, and we're laughing because Loya just called it Bad Bath, and then we were discussing Bad Bath and Beyond, and also the fact that still, every time anyone sees the logo, they misread it as Bad Bitch, so it's just a problematic name for the series. But it was announced that that is being released on May 4th, Star Wars Day, on Disney Plus, of course. And when this was first announced, I have to admit I wasn't super excited about it because I'm not super into the clones, although they have their moments that I did really appreciate in Clone Wars. But It has been revealed that Fennec Shand from The Mandalorian is going to be in the Bad Batch. And it also sounds like there are some interesting people involved in the writing and production. So I am definitely interested to watch it and see what it's like.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. I am also excited. I do like the clones more than you. What was your overall impression? I think because I'm friends with you on Goodreads, I know how you feel, but I would be interested to know.
Well, I mean, you're not only friends with me on Goodreads,
no you're further.
Also my friend in real life.
And you generally we've talked about this.
Probably had predicted my feelings on a lot of things. So you're correct that I did love it. I expected to love it because I really like Claudia Gray. I've really enjoyed other Star Wars books that she's written, and Leia is my absolute favorite character, so I feel like just for that reason I was gonna love it. Anything that allows me to spend more time with Leia. But yeah, I gave it 5 stars on Goodreads, so obviously yep. I liked it a lot.
Yep, I did the same. It was a highly enjoyable read. I feel like because I'm reading a bunch of Star Wars things for this podcast, the last 2 months of reading have been phenomenal for me. Like, just quality. So, yes, I agree. I also loved it. And you also introduced me to the phrase, it me, which yeah. I was unfamiliar with.
Maybe I'm just, like, flattering myself here because I just wish that I were Leia. But I related a lot to her in this book, like, especially teenage her, because mm-hmm. I was just, like, a very mature teenager, like she is, who, you know, wasn't getting into trouble, was, like, super into, if I had had the ability to be in, like, an apprentice legislature, I probably would have been, and just some of the things that they talk about her doing, because, like, we are kind of inside Leia's head. Like, there's a part in the book where she's, like, going over in her head what she's going to say to someone. And, like, if the conversation goes this way, I'll say this. If it goes this way, I'll say this other thing. Another thing that really resonated with me was in one of the scenes where they are in the pathfinding class. I think it's actually Keir who points out, like, oh yeah, I noticed that tree because I could tell it was struck by lightning. And she's just, like, thinking, like, yeah, I noticed that tree too, but I didn't realize it was struck by lightning. Like, oh my god, I missed that. Like, why didn't I realize that? Like, I don't know. It just all felt very familiar to me. Like, I also just feel like Keir just seems like someone that I would have a crush on. Like, he's a weirdo. He's weird.
He's
probably not someone that, like, everyone that they knew was like, oh my god, Keir. He's, like, obviously very intelligent. He does reenactments of clone.
Oh my gosh, troopers. I can't wait to get into that.
Like, he has weird interests. He just seems like the type of person that I would be super into. But, like, no one else would get it.
Yeah, I liked the fact that, like, his description was kind of, like, he was very unusual looking, or he could be handsome, and, like, you know, Leia falls on the side that he's handsome, as does her mother, which I thought was interesting. I was trying to think, like, which character would have been my high school crush? The snake guy? Oh. I was thinking, like, crush. Davis. Because he's a bit of a jerk, but he's also kind of popular and arrogant, and those are turnoffs. Also not that competent. So, yeah. I initially really liked Keir, and then progressively just started waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then, in terms of, like, did you have any, like, other favorite moments, or least favorite moments, perhaps?
Not necessarily moments, but aspects of the mm-hmm. book that I really liked. I just love Alderaan.
Yes.
And that really started with Queen Shadow when Padme mm-hmm. was spending time on Alderaan. Like, obviously I love Bail and Brea, but I also just love the planet.
Yeah.
I think because it's a really interesting mix of being obviously like very well established, and they talk about how, you know, they have stone architecture and all of these things that like would be familiar to us if we were to travel to places that have had civilizations that have existed for a long time. But then they like don't have servants really. They have mm-hmm. droids, and they have more advanced technology than we do, but that probably just appeals to me because, as we've discussed before, I have useless degrees that are related to history, so it's my thing, but I just feel like Alderaan sounds like it's so beautiful, and like I would love to go there, and it just makes it so much worse that it gets destroyed.
Yeah, I was very acutely aware, like, throughout that this planet no longer exists. I agree. Like, I liked the world building on Alderaan a lot. I like the fact, like, I liked the description of how the monarchy interacts with its subjects. Leia and her parents are very humble. They serve the people. And that was really compelling to me.
So other than that, I also thought that it just really did add to your understanding of Leia.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I particularly really loved is that, like, obviously Leia was always really smart, and even as a teenager was really capable and competent, you know. I'm sure that you
very important
you appreciate her competence.
Yes.
And like, she is just a badass, but this book also shows that, like, she's not just automatically that way. There are things that she does have to overcome, and she has fears that she has to get past, and
yeah.
She still struggles, but she's able to persevere, and I think that's like a defining characteristic of Leia. And
yeah.
It's just nice to kind of see that behind her actions, that, you know, she's not perfect, but she's making it happen. And I actually was thinking of one of Carrie Fisher's famous quotes, which is, "Stay afraid, but do it anyway."
I like that.
I appreciate that they kind of show that in Leia.
And yeah, before we transition, speaking of Brea, they mention her heart and lungs and the pulmonoids, and I loved it. It's just, like, they mentioned it twice, and I liked it both times.
Heart, any lung, mention Leia. Of the pulmonoids. The best thing in Star Wars, apparently.
The book itself revolves around Leia's challenges that she needs to complete in order to be recognized as heir to the throne. And so it starts off really up front, page 7, she announces her challenges. All right, so on page 7, she comes right out and says, "For my challenge of the body, I will climb a Penza peak and reach its summit. For my challenge of the mind, I will no longer merely assist my father in the Imperial Senate, but also represent our world in the Apprentice Legislature. And for my challenge of the heart, I will undertake missions of charity and mercy to planets in need, paying all costs from my share of the royal purse." And so she starts doing these things. As part of the challenge of the body, she takes a pathfinding class. It talks about her time in the Apprentice Legislature. And then the challenge of the heart is she takes these like various missions that inevitably become very complicated to different planets, and kind of firsthand experiences rule under Palpatine, which was very interesting. We can talk about pathfinding to start. What did you think of that? I wanted to take this class so
bad. Oh my God. No, I was like, definitely not want to take that. I would hate that. I would feel like I wouldn't survive. Like, something would happen to me, like what happened to that girl, or like what happened to Brea. Like, I would just fall off the mountain.
I have
and if I didn't depression. Fall off the mountain, I would just have something else happen. I would injure myself in some way.
Your
I would, if I didn't,
would
I would be miserable. Yeah, like, no, that would not be for me.
This is aspirational for me because I have a terrible sense of direction. I am not very intuitive when it comes to my movements. So I get the feeling that, like, if I were to fall, I would, like, twist myself and, like, fall worse than if I just relaxed. But I was so jealous. I felt like I would just love to hang out with Holdo and just, you know, figure out ways to go through planets and like the usefulness of these skills. Like, this explains so much why Leia is so at ease and confident in a variety of situations. Like, it doesn't matter if she's on Hoth. It doesn't matter if she's like on another planet. She knows what she's doing, because I think in part of this pathfinding class that she's able to find her way and navigate and survive and succeed. So that was really cool. I liked that description. And it also like encourages her to like form deeper connections with people in her apprentice legislature group. As with Queen Shadow, I love the depictions of Star Wars politics. I could do this all day long. And it's just like, I always think though with politics, the clip from Muppet Treasure Island where the band is playing. I actually linked to it in the outline for this episode because I love it. I feel like everyone should love this. So they're playing on the beach and they're talking about like, oh, which side are we on? Are we for the frog captain or are we for the pirates? Oh man, we don't get involved. We're like, you stay out of politics. And the animal just goes, politics, politics. And that's all I had in my head. I was like, yes, more politics. Leia joins the apprentice legislature. She is 16, which I thought was interesting because I looked it up. I swear that we had discussed like the apprentice legislature in regards to Queen Shadow, and it is mentioned. So Padme joined it when she was 8, which is kind of crazy. I'm just imagining an 8-year-old in the position that Leia is in.
Well, especially because at least at this time, and maybe that wasn't the case when Padme was in the apprentice legislature, they're allowing these teenagers to make actual decisions. And they do talk about how it's like obviously not the most critical decisions, but they have consequences. So just imagine an 8-year-old doing that.
And I feel like there's even more control now. So Padme's actions as an 8-year-old could have had very like unplanned consequences as opposed to what Palpatine wants. So there's a lot of recognition, or a slow recognition, that the apprentice legislature is fulfilling the wish of the Emperor. And so on page 231, Leia is thinking to herself, it's a puppet show for children. She thought bitterly, we're both the audience and the props. And there are definitely some moments where, as part of this program, there are life and death situations. So what immediately comes to mind is there's a situation with Holdo, where Holdo is just plowing forward. She's like, no, this isn't right, da 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 da. And Leia kind of has to intercede to save her because pro-Empire constituents, I guess, like the children of people who were supporting the Emperor, started to like get really agitated. So yeah, there's a situation where Holdo could have been in serious danger and Leia swoops in to save the day. Like, despite Leia's characterization of the legislature as a puppet show, there are definitely real world implications. And then in regards to her final challenge, the challenge of the hearts, she goes on these expeditions to provide aid to different planets. And I think all of them, right? They all end in unintended or unexpected ways. So she goes to a planet and she's providing, I think, food and some medicine, and realizes that people, like, this is not enough. And so then she tries to bring people aboard to bring them to Alderaan, and they say no. And so then they're like, only your crew. So she comes with the idea to hire people, like hire citizens as her crew, so she can bring them to Alderaan. And then this ends up like blowing up because it ruins a mission that her parents were planning on doing that she didn't know about, and et cetera, et cetera. Eventually, as her charity missions progress, there's this discovery that she realizes the rebellion is discussing internally about whether they're going to have to go to war. And I just kept thinking of like, oh, this is actually what was going on, because in our first episode of the season, when we were talking about Rogue One, I was like, what is the rebellion doing? Nothing. I mean, they're definitely not fighting. They are conducting kind of like internal debates, I guess, on how to proceed. And they're kind of just trying to like subtly change things for different groups of people, but there is definitely an aversion to going into a full-out war. And as Leia, Princess of Alderaan, progresses, there's a growing realization that this is what they're going to end up doing. And finally, they mentioned Saw Gerrera, which I enjoyed, surprisingly, because when we talked about Rogue One, I was terrified of him, and I still am. But it was kind of like linked things up in my mind in a way that, like, I enjoyed, right? Like, it was kind of like filling in the blank. Okay, that's what was happening. This fits into Rogue One, which in turn fits into Last Jedi, et cetera, et cetera. So I really appreciated that. Although he does almost kill Leia.
He almost kills Leia, and then Leia also is afraid that it was her parents that actually did what Saw did. Not gonna lie, when I was reading it, and she thought it was her parents, I was like, is it? And then I was like, oh no, it's Saw Gerrera.
That's kind of the overview of the plots. What I'm really most interested in talking about is the characters and the way that Leia interacts with them, because that's just very compelling to me. And I also appreciate, again, the fact that there's old and new characters, and it kind of fleshes out the old characters while introducing new and interesting ones that help explain other things. The first group of characters that I want to talk about is the droid. There are cameos in this by R2-D2 and C-3PO. C-3PO, I think, is referenced directly by name, but R2-D2 is just the blue and white astromech, if I'm recalling correctly.
Yes.
The main droid of interest is WA-27, which she calls 2V, and it is a personal attendant droid who does Leia's hair and is very concerned about fashion. And ergo, I am not at all interested in 2V. Like, at all. I don't know if you had any thoughts.
Seems annoying.
Yeah.
And you had a note that, like, well, at least now we know how Leia does her hair. But I'm assuming that she doesn't just have this droid. Well, unless she was traveling with this droid constantly, always, that she took with her from Alderaan, is 2V still around? Like, is she still doing Leia's hair in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, like, braiding her hair every day?
I mean, I just, her hairstyles can be so elaborate. I feel like she has to have some help, right? Like, Padme had the handmaidens. Leia has a droid. I feel like her simpler hairdos, no, but maybe the braids are easier than I think they are.
Well, I mean, I guess her Empire Strikes Back hair she could do herself. That's bad. Can I personally do that hair myself? No, but could someone? Yes. And I guess same for her hair in Return of the Jedi. I think I just want to assume that 2V was destroyed with Alderaan, but
she never goes in the Tantive. She never actually goes on the ship, so maybe you're right, because When we're introduced to Leia in A New Hope, she's on the ship. It's not like 2V is going to be there with her.
Yeah, that seems just unnecessary if you're on missions for the Rebellion. Having a hairdressing fashion consultant droid with you.
Yeah.
Although, exactly. Leia does talk in this book about how, like, she realized that 2V was right, that she should always portray herself in a certain way, and that it was actually important to, like, dress the part and look like a princess, which is a very Padme thing as well, but I guess she doesn't necessarily need 2V to do that.
No, I would agree. So you're right, I don't think 2V is, like, a continuing presence. This did just make me miss Chopper, who I think of all the droids is my favorite from Rebels.
Someone else made that statement today that Chopper was her favorite droid. I have to be honest, I don't like Chopper.
What? Like, at all? He's so funny. And he's kind of selfish, and I just love his sass.
That's why I don't like him. See, I'll explain myself.
Okay.
Chopper is too abrasive for me. And you're right, he is selfish, and I don't like it. I love R2-D2. In my opinion, he will always be the best droid. And I feel like part of that is because, like, R2-D2 is also very sassy.
Yes.
He has a big personality. He's funny. But he is actually, I won't say Chopper isn't helpful. Chopper is helpful.
Chopper is very
but
helpful.
But R2-D2 is not selfish, and I appreciate that about him.
Yeah, the episode where, I just watched an episode where Chopper, like, abandons a mission because he wants a new leg. But then he rescues an Imperial droid, and it all works out. So, yeah, I like his attitude. I don't think I probably
Chopper
like
is
it.
Too much. Chopper's yeah. too much for me. Like, R2-D2 is, like, the perfect amount of being sassy, but that's, like, all I can handle.
I don't know why I keep saying yeah, because I don't agree, but I can see where you're coming from. So maybe that's what the yeah is. Yes, I understand you. The other person I want to talk about very briefly, people, I guess, because we'll just make our way through these, is Captain Antilles. And he is the first story in from a certain point of view, I do believe. So he dies. It was jarring a bit to go from that, which I am reading like slowly in the background as I read other things, to Leia, Princess of Alderaan, because he's mentioned more than a few times, and each time it was like, oh, you're alive. Oh, hey. Like, that was kind of a bit of a shock just to go from those two things. And then the other character that they introduce in terms of, like, is it the guard? The guard of Alderaan, the military of Alderaan, is Bress Batten, who kind of takes a role as Leia's illicit pilot. So when Leia wants to scope something out, she enlists Bress Batten's help, and Bress is discreet, and eventually she is brought into the overall rebellion.
She seems a little too nonchalant to me. Like, yes, Leia is very competent and she's very mature, but she is 16, and I can't imagine, like, just flying a 16-year-old around being like, I'll do whatever you want, and I won't tell anyone, and I'll just, like, be very chill about everything.
And more than just chill, right? She's actually kind of looking forward to it. Leia makes reference to her being excited, like, this is something kind of that she enjoys the working outside of the normal chain of command, I think, a little bit. Which, again, you are kind of putting a 16-year-old in danger, but when your 16-year-old is so competent, like, I would fly someone around and be like, all right.
But now we're having double standards, because we have complained in the past about how Anakin would just drop Ahsoka off places and be like, you're fine, and then
that's
she would
true.
Inevitably get herself into some dangerous situation, and he would be nowhere to be found, which... Then
that's
we have to get
true.
Into, like, is Ahsoka less competent than Leia? Which I don't want to get into, but...
No,
like,
no, I agree.
They're comparable ages, and we were like, she's not an adult, she's a teenager, you can't just leave her places.
That's true. That is true. I feel like that's more a reflection of my feelings towards Anakin, though. So that's just my bias towards Anakin. So I think that's where we'll leave that.
Well, it's also crazy to think that this is only a few years before A New Hope.
Yeah.
And Leia was only 19 at that point.
Yep.
And she had already been through all of this.
Yep.
Like, this is just like a brief period of time. And then there was still another, like, we'll just say 2.5 years in between the events of this book and A New Hope. So, like, yeah, she definitely was, like, way ahead of most people, and mm-hmm. then, once again, when I think of Luke...
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah, that comparison. Mm-mm. That does not serve anyone well. I mean, Leia always serves... Leia comes out ahead, as we know. I thought the timeline, like, made a lot of sense. It was enough world building that, like, her actions later didn't seem wildly out of character. And also, as we'll discuss later, like, not too long of a time where, like, her decisions in this stopped making sense.
This book actually made some of her actions and her behavior in the movies just, it really kind of flowed well. And you were like, mm-hmm. okay, well, if this is what had happened prior to that, like, I totally understand why she'd react that way.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Claudia Gray got Leia.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Dalne, who is the current queen of Naboo. So in one of the charity missions that ends up going sideways, Leia goes to, I can never remember this, Onum? Onum? It's a moon. It's a moon of Naboo. And she's delivering medical aid to a group of miners. And she stumbles across the current queen of Naboo, who is Dalne. And I'm just going to say, like, this is so frustrating for me in Star Wars. It makes everything seem like it was so long ago. And so there's this like description of Leia listened to Dalne talk about the many roles Naboo handmaidens had played in the past, serving as everything from personal counselors to intelligence operatives. Their tradition had faded as the queen became more of a figurehead than a ruler. Leia's 16. Her mom, Padme, who was a queen of Naboo, died 16 years ago. At the time, there was a queen of Naboo who wasn't operating in that dissimilar of a manner than Padme did when she was queen of Naboo. So what is this, like, as tradition gradually faded stuff? Like, you mean since the Empire took control? Like, 16 years is not that long.
No.
And we'll talk about that.
Like, why even mention that?
Yeah.
Other than to just remind people of Padme, which fine. But like, yeah, then you have to get into like, well, why do people not remember this when,
right,
it wasn't that long ago?
It's like the same thing in The Mandalorian with like, oh, there are space wizards and sorcerers. No one knows what the Force is. And it's just like, those events were not that long ago. Did everyone just have like collective amnesia?
Well, I feel like it's almost more understandable in that case because there had been no Jedi that people knew of for a decently long time. Like,
25 years.
Yeah, that's true. I was just thinking, like, since then, there had really hadn't been anyone. Although, like, the more media that gets produced, the more that they're like, well, but not all the Jedi,
right,
were killed, Rebels, in Order 66, and, like, some of them were still out there. So that kind of muddies things too, but yeah, you're right. Like, it was only generously like 25 years,
yeah,
prior.
And the other point I wanted to make was, it sounded like, so in Queen's Shadow, E.K. Johnson makes it very clear that Padme and Sabe came up with the like flat intonation of Amidala together because it was easier to do the switch. So they just like flattened their voice when they were speaking as the queen, which I'm keep trying to do and not failing. But then in this, it seems like that was kind of institutionalized in the 16 years, you know. So on page 166, this is not a suspect. I can't do it. Dalne said in a flatter, deeper flattered voice. That meant she spoke not as individual, but as monarch. So there was, I guess, that became a thing. Which is fine. Just wanted to highlight that.
You would think, though, that that would be a thing prior to Padme and Sabe, if it was tradition that queens of Naboo had handmaidens and, like...
Yeah.
Although, I guess it is also implied that, like, they switched more than other handmaidens had before,
right,
or that like Sabe took on a greater role speaking for Padme.
Maybe,
yeah,
if we read Queen's Peril, we'll find out more about that, because I'm interested. It is kind of ambiguous, I guess, in terms of whether previous queens of Naboo did switches like Padme and Sabe did.
Right. Probably not to that extent.
Right.
At least.
Yeah. Intelligence operatives in this book is kind of a catch-all category. And then we get to Panaka, who I had to refresh my memory of who that was.
Well, I was reading it and I was like, Panaka, is this Padme's Panaka? And obviously it was.
Indeed. So after Leia tries to help the miners and they say they look dismayed at her offer because the Imperials are going to take it from them anyways. So she goes to Moff Panaka, who has a reputation of being a personally loyal to the Emperor, but also fair. And so she's trying to get him to agree to essentially monitor or prevent the Imperials from taking these medical supplies from the miners. And the first thing Panaka does is drop his cup of tea. Because he knew Padme. And here's Leia, who borrowed a dress from Dalnay and is dressed as not quite the same level as a queen of Naboo, but she's fancier than she would normally be, and it's enough to, for him to kind of make that connection.
So I had this section bookmarked, and I'll just read it. So she's having this conversation with Panaka about the miners, and he basically says that he'll help them, but then he says, meeting you has been a unique experience. Panaka cocked his head, still studying her with that laser gaze. I shall speak to Palpatine himself about this. And Leia says, about the miners? That was much more than Leia had dared hope for. Panaka shook his head. About you, Your Highness, I think he should know that the Organas adopted a daughter of such distinction. And she's like, I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Was it implied that he... I think he knew that she was Padme's daughter.
Yeah.
But, like, what did that mean to him? Like, did he know that Anakin was the father? And then, like... because he doesn't know that Vader is Anakin. Like, no one knows that. So,
oh my god, you're right.
I don't quite get the implications of that.
You're right, because I was like, well, he knows, but he would only know about Padme.
Right.
Or, I mean, he might know about Padme and Anakin, but, like, again, what is that really, like, what's that significance to him?
Exactly. Because my initial reaction was like, oh my god, he was going to tell Palpatine about Leia. But then I was like, wait, I don't even know if that would be meaningful. I mean, it would be meaningful to Palpatine because he knows. Like, he knows that Anakin is Vader, and he knows that Leia is Anakin Padme's daughter, but Panaka doesn't know that.
I mean, maybe it would be enough, though, that she would be the daughter of Padme and Anakin, because Anakin, like, was pretty powerful. And I think at this point, like, I would assume Palpatine is making it pretty clear he's very interested in Force sensitivity and Force sensitive children. So maybe it's, that's just enough. Like, she's the daughter of a known Jedi.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, we would have to assume that he also knows that Anakin was the father, which
is, I feel like, that's
possibly
pretty...
a stretch, but possible.
I don't know, considering how, like, open they were about their stuff. Like, again, you're kissing in the middle of this open area with tons of columns. Anyone could literally see you. But it doesn't matter, because Soccer Air kills him. Like, 10 seconds later.
But on that note, you had a note about Leia picking up on the Force in this section of the book.
Which is confirmed, like you had pointed out, like, during the Pathfinder mission, which we'll talk about, she definitely is picking up on the Force. But I'm wondering, like, is she picking on the Force here? Because she's definitely, like, more discomfited. I've never said that word out loud. Discomfited?
There's some, like, I don't know, I guess it's not a meme, but, like, there's something that I see every so often on the internet that's just, like, never make fun of someone who mispronounces a word, because that means that they learned it by reading.
I love that. Darth Brooks is very supportive, because I mispronounce things even when I know how to say them. But also, frequently, it's because I've never said them out loud. So she's discomfited by his behavior in a way that she, like, says is more than she would have. So she literally says, like, Leia felt more disconcerted by Panaka's odd behavior than she should have.
Yeah, like, she didn't know why she felt so uncomfortable.
Yeah. I'm guessing she was picking up on something in the Force. That seems like a plausible explanation. And then when it's later solidified during the Pathfinding mission. Then, yeah.
So she basically saves Kier on one of the pathfinding missions, and he keeps asking her, like, are you sure? And she is just like, yes, I know that this is the right thing to do, and we'll be okay.
I have very strong feelings about that entire scene, which we'll get into. But she's definitely using the Force there, so it makes sense that she would be using the Force here. Like any good author, Claudia Gray kind of sprinkles things in, lets the reader make their own conclusions, and then confirms, bam. So Tarkin also features very heavily in this book, which I appreciated because it almost made me able to forget Rogue One CGI. Using my imagination is great. We don't need to see CGI Tarkin. And there's a lot of scenes between him and Leia where I was very, very impressed by Leia's ability to lie and recognize her own sense of emotion. I don't know if you want to read this particular passage I highlighted.
Sure, the one on page 356 of your hardcover edition.
My hardcover edition. Everyone should buy this.
I have the Kindle version, so our page numbers are different. And if I'm citing a page number, it's the Kindle edition. If Loya is citing one, it's the hardcover. So not that you're like going and looking up these quotes as you're listening to the episode, but just for your reference. So this is the interrogation, I guess, interrogation in a light sense, like not the interrogation that happens to Leia in A New Hope, but just having a tense conversation with Tarkin. Her entire body tightened, her throat strangling her voice, her ears trying to shut out sound so she couldn't hear any more of this. Leia's heart beat wildly in her chest, and the impulse to dash out of the room was almost overwhelming. She simply sipped her tea before saying, so steadily it shocked her, I realize how important that is to Emperor Palpatine. So I think this is so interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's been shown both in this book and in the movies that like Leia has a temper.
Yeah.
And she has emotions and she's not, again, she's not just like naturally this calm and cool and collected.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to kind of like find that within herself so that that's the only thing that she actually expresses. She almost has like this mode that she snaps into that I called senatorial mode in my notes, where
good name,
like there may be a totally different way that she wants to react, but she recognizes that she can't, and she's able to project this image of just being like totally calm and unbothered and honestly like a little superior, which I think is conscious, but it works. And mm-hmm. it's what she needs to do, and it is very impressive.
Yeah, and she can also like scale down and be like, she plays it up so she's like, oh, I didn't know, and she's like scared. Like she recognizes the moments when she needs to be one way versus another, and that's just so impressive to me because I feel like I'm probably more on Luke's side where I'm just like, I don't know. Why are you making me answer that? Like, I'm very bad at hiding my emotions. If my heart was beating wildly out of my chest and I felt the impulse to dash out of the room, I would be dashing out of the room. Like,
yeah, that's something else I really appreciate about the way that Claudia Gray mm-hmm. writes, is that, again, she, you know, shows that Leia did want to just get out of there,
mm-hmm.
but she was able to kind of master that impulse. And, you know, it doesn't mean that she wasn't scared or upset or threatened, but she was able to still get herself together.
This makes it even kind of worse that she decided not to pursue being a Jedi. Because I feel like she's got that down, right? Like, even when she's feeling emotions, she's able to, like, recognize them, rein them in, and react appropriately, which is a pillar of being a Jedi in a way that Luke struggles with for a while, even as she's mastering it at 16.
That is true, but I have a lot of complicated feelings about that whole concept of Leia being a Jedi and how that did kind of come to be in Rise of Skywalker. And
it could have been
different if it could have been a lot different if it weren't just like revealed in the last movie of the Skywalker saga for 2 minutes. But
for no purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. I had already known that that wasn't Leia's path. It wasn't her choice. I guess it, you know, technically wasn't her choice in Rise of Skywalker either. But yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying. I think she could have been well suited for that if she wanted to be.
Okay. Mon Mothma also makes an appearance, and she's kind of what I consider to be a benevolent aunt figure. There are, like, multiple times where, like, Leia is like, my parents are refusing to, like, see my point of view, so let me approach Mon Mothma, who at least treats me as an adult, which I appreciated. I feel like Mon Mothma doesn't naturally lend herself to that. At least when I think about her, I'm not like, oh, she's my aunt. I was also amused when Holdo, it's weird that I refer to her as Holdo and not like Amelin, but Holdo kind of stows away on a ship. Was that the Millennium Falcon?
The ship that they were on?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
But there is a Millennium Falcon cameo.
Yeah, I saw that you had mentioned that. I was just like, what? I missed that. Just some up, like, so they stow away on the ship. They arrive, Mon Mothma is there, and kind of, like, dealing with these two stowaway girls who disrupt this, like, very awkward situation between Quarians? No, just kidding. they reveal themselves, and Holdo goes, I'm so glad you guys found each other, which I loved. And they're revealing to Mon Mothma that someone in their organization has dealings with the Empire and may have the ability to betray them. And so she says this, and Mon Mothma took a step backward. For most people, it would have been a small reaction, but from the calm, collected Mon Mothma, it might as well have been a scream.
We were talking about the Millennium Falcon cameo. Yes. So when Leia is looking to hire a ship to go to Hamarth, she approaches someone and he's just like, no, you're a tiny little girl. What are you doing hauling anything? And then he tells her to go find a passenger ship.
Yeah.
And she's still looking around trying to find a different ship that will possibly take her. And she says, not she says, the book says, 3 pilots had turned her down so far. She'd also hurried after one YT model ship that had looked promisingly run down and probably in need of money for repairs, but it took off before she could even reach it.
So that's very impressive, and I did not pick up on that reference at all. Probably because I didn't realize the Millennium Falcon was a YT model.
Okay.
So a strong theme throughout the book, especially at the beginning, is the fact that Leia is feeling more isolated and more cut off from her parents. So they're busy hosting what she thinks are parties and affairs, and her dad's got on all the time. And in actuality, they're planning rebellion actions. But it was interesting because, like, as I was reading this, I felt so much empathy for Leia, and I don't know why. I deliberately, like, disengaged from my parents after a certain point because I realized, like, in middle school that I was getting credit for my mom's artistry. And so I basically just said, Mom, stop helping me. So I don't know why this felt so familiar, like, trying to get your parents' attention. Unless, like, my attitude was like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. But I definitely felt like it was very, very, very familiar.
They clearly just have so much affection for each other. And
when they interact.
Yeah. Like, I know they're very protective of her, but they also do recognize that she is smart and capable. And they have, I think, a lot of faith in her, even though they're very worried about the danger that she might put herself in. And I don't, it's just clearly a very, like, wonderful family relationship.
I would say overall very wonderful, but it is very frustrating for me, like, throughout this book, how they consistently, like, push her away. Leia herself recognizes the fact, like, their judgment is flawed Because if the Empire finds out that they are involved in the rebellion, she is not going to be spared. It doesn't matter her actual involvement, she would be killed. And it's just, like, consistently frustrating that, like, she spends so much of the novel trying to get them, not even, like, she's not trying to get them to see anything, but, like, that they're so determinedly not seeing that in her in their interactions. Like, that was a little bit frustrating for me.
Well, then it's also just weird how it all works out, because she's the one who survives, even mm-hmm. though she's putting herself in these dangerous situations, and they're the ones who die.
I was very, like, as the book progressed, I was just like, what does happen to Bail? What does happen to Brea? And it's just like, yeah, they die when the Death Star destroys Alderaan. And that's it. So I had written, like, I feel the need to, like, consume other media to, like, kind of, like, process that. And I know you had, like, a suggestion for me.
Yeah, so there is a story in From a Certain Point of View, A New Hope, that details essentially Bail and Brea's last moments on Alderaan. And it is devastating. I was saying, I don't think that it's going to make you feel better. Mm-hmm. You were like, oh, that'll make me feel better. And I was like, no, it won't. But
that's true.
It will kind of, like, help you to come full circle on that, I guess.
Yeah, because I feel like it is treated very sparingly in terms of the movie. Like, you see Alderaan being destroyed, and you see, like, the no, but then it's not dealt with later, if I'm recalling correctly. I should really rewatch the trilogy, the original trilogy.
Well, people also, I've seen people complain that, or not complain, or just, like, point out that after Alderaan is destroyed, Leia is just, like, unaffected by it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when it is destroyed, she's obviously distraught, but then, like, I don't really know what people expect her to do. Like, she was still in mortal danger and had a lot of things that she needed to deal with at that moment. So the fact that she's not just, like, sitting in a corner crying is understandable. But also, if you do get to know Leia, like,
yeah,
she's able to keep going because she knows she has to. And that's kind of what's unfortunate and tragic about Leia's character, is she has to face all of these things, and it seems like it just never ends for her, honestly.
God, but that's true.
She does keep going, so, like, it's inspiring in a way, but it's also sad.
Yeah. Yep, and I do feel like this book kind of sets the stage for that, right? Because we do get those interactions with Tarkin, we do get these other points in the novel where, like, she is so able to just continue doing what she's doing despite her emotions.
So the story in From a Certain Point of View is Eclipse by Madeline Rue.
The author sounds very familiar to me.
She wrote the best-selling Asylum series. She also has a tattoo sleeve dedicated to the ladies of Star Wars.
That is amazing.
Yeah. She has Ahsoka, Hera Syndulla, Leia, Padme.
Oh my god.
Rey, BB-8.
Well, I'm adding her to my authors to read. The other points I wanted to make is that I did understand where Braille, that's her portmanteau.
Braille. That's her couple name.
Yeah, Braille. Exactly. Bail and Breha. I did understand where they were coming from, because, like, if imagining, like, my 16-year-old daughter, I would want to protect her with, like, everything I could. But at the same time, like, Leia has pretty amazing skills, and I don't really understand where they're coming from in terms of, like, the restrictions, because what, you're just gonna, like, force your daughter to live under a basket for the rest of her life? Like,
a basket.
So the first thing that came to my mind was, like,
like a laundry basket. You, like, put, no, it,
I don't, no, know. The don't put your light under a basket. What's that song? So I'm sure the part where we're talking about Catholicism will be cut out, but in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus says, nor do they light a lamp and then put it under a bushel basket. It is set on the lampstand where it gives light to all in the house.
Oh, okay.
So there's a song. There's a song that I grew up singing. This Little Light of Mine.
I do know that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the whole idea is, like, you don't put your light under a basket.
I was just thinking about when my husband has, like, put a laundry basket on top of our cat or dog to mess with them.
Oh my gosh, I've never done that. Well, first of all, our dog would totally freak out. Like, that would not, I would never do that to him because he would not trust us for, like, months. But our cat, that would be pretty hilarious. He's unfazed. Our cat is, like, has no sense of fear
whatsoever.
I also don't think he would mind. He'd be like, oh, cool, new space for me to explore. How does your cat react?
I don't know. He's fine.
Yeah. I feel like your cat and my cat, if my cat liked other cats, and if your cat liked other cats, I guess I really don't know if your cat likes other cats. And then, oh my gosh. Okay, we're at Holdo. So, I loved Holdo. Amelin Holdo in this book was fantastic. She was exactly what I needed when I needed it, and I did not know I needed it. So, she has this whole, like, segment with Leia where she's talking about, like, Leia's like, is it okay to be happy when so many people are suffering? And Holdo's just like, yes, like, you have to take care of yourself so you can take care of other people. And that was exactly what I needed to hear this week, just in general. So yeah, loved her. I felt like this added so much to The Last Jedi. I feel like I want to watch that just to see more Holdo. I would watch a Holdo spinoff show. Like, give me more.
I just kept thinking about Luna Lovegood.
Mm-hmm. She is very Luna Lovegood-esque. But for some reason, I felt like she was more somber than Luna Lovegood. There are the same glimmer of insights and the same glimmer of wisdom. But maybe the sky fairing was enough. And the kind of, like, focus on meditation. And also, she was really very tolerant of, like, putting herself in danger. Maybe I'm selling Luna Lovegood shorts.
Well, I did really enjoy the skyfaring. And yes. We just were having a side conversation about the fact that I have clinical anxiety. And I really appreciate any time in a book that they kind of talk about mindfulness and being able to kind of find a space in the midst of anything that's going on around you to be calm and to be okay. And that's something that I personally struggle with, like, being able to just center myself and recognize that just because there is something bad happening, that doesn't mean that everything is bad and that you can't find joy in anything. So I did also kind of, like, I kind of always need that. So I appreciated Holdo bringing that to the book, and was also thinking too with the skyfaring about my experiences doing yoga. And there was a part of the book where Leia was, I always want to say talking, but I guess she's technically thinking because she's not saying it to anyone. So yeah, Leia is saying that the only person she could bear to spend time with was Amelin, who took her skyfaring nearly every day. The struggle to stay aloft in the scars pushed everything else from her mind and allowed her to exist only in her body, in the now. And that is something I struggle with a lot. And I have found a way to do that with yoga, and I feel like this is very similar, being able to kind of exist in that space where you're not just completely in your head.
Yeah. And I agree. I agree. I like the fact, the way it's portrayed too, where, like, there is this levity to it, or joy. It's more joy than levity. Like, so the scene that I feel like really encapsulates it is just like, it's on page 239 in the hardcover. Leia saying, but she hadn't expected to be, quote, hanging out quite so literally. Imagine you're carved of wood. Emmeline Holdo held herself firmly in the splits, despite the fact she wasn't on the floor but suspended in midair, held aloft by brilliantly colored scarves she acrobatically twisted around each leg, unbending, unyielding. And that is just like, I loved that. It was so funny to me and also just like so inspiring. Like, I would, again, love to learn how to skyfare. Sounds amazing.
I would love how to do that too, but I also feel like I would probably be bad at that. Like,
yeah,
I can do yoga. I don't know if I could do skyfaring. I would definitely like to try, and I'm sure that I could figure out how to do it, but I don't think I would be a natural at it. So
no.
I did also appreciate that Leia was not instantly good at it either.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I feel like I don't have the upper body strength. Also, I loved Holdo's attitude towards other species, and I feel like we should do, like, a little reading here. And I'm totally being Holdo in this situation. Aspirational. So, I'll be Holdo, and I'm advising you about your relationship with Kier. Don't let your head be turned by the most dangerous substance known to exist.
Which is?
A pair of pretty dark eyes. Then Amelin thought into that for a second. Or more than a pair, if you're into Grands. Or Aqualish, or Tals, or even...
That's all right, Leia said through laughter. It's just humanoid males for me.
Really? That feels so limiting. loved. Let's just open this entire world up. I'm totally in support of this.
So I agree, but then also... I was wondering if this conversation was partly a reference to a deleted scene from The Last Jedi, which I don't even know if we've ever talked about.
No.
But there apparently was a scene filmed as part of, like, the aftermath of the whole hand touch between Rey and Ben.
Yeah.
Where, like, Luke says something to Rey, like, you almost sold yourself to the dark side for a pair of pretty dark eyes or something like that.
What? I honestly, when I first saw your note here, I thought there was like some relationship that Holdo had with the Grands and Aqualish or Tals. I'm just like, no way. They went there? No. They could go there. I would totally be there for that. But yes. They didn't. But speaking of love interest, a perfect segue for Kier. I initially really liked him. He's introduced as a snob, but then Leia, like, inevitably realizes it's just shyness, which I appreciate. And then we talked about him being, like, a kind of odd-looking or handsome, and then she realizes it's handsome. I really like the fact he, like, considers things before he speaks. And then it starts getting into, like, They're doing introductions at the Apprentice Legislature, and he says on page 92, I plan to be a historian specializing in the Clone Wars era, so I take part in Clone Wars reenactments whenever I can. I usually play a clone scuba trooper whenever aquatic battles come up. So the Clone Wars were like 16 years ago, 18 years ago. It was kind of a mixed bag in terms of, like, support. So I'm just imagining, like, an equivalent situation occurring today. And the first thing I thought of was, like, people reenacting the Vietnam War, which doesn't happen because, like, no, why would you do that? But in actuality, with the 16, like, 18-year timeline, it would actually probably be more similar to, like, the 2003 Iraqi invasion. Like, no one does this. No one reenacts wars that are like less than 20. I mean, honestly, no one reenacts wars that are less than like over 100 years old at this point. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe
that you have being said, if I had met someone in high school that was like, in my spare time, I'm a Revolutionary War reenactor, I would have been like, I'm very interested.
Yeah, but then just substitute like Vietnam War reenactor.
Yeah, that would be a little weird.
Yeah, or Korean War, or any of the other conflicts we've had in like recent memory.
I guess there are people probably that are like Vietnam War enthusiasts of some kind that they like read a lot about the Vietnam War.
Right.
Maybe but they're like, not collect things related to the Vietnam War, but you're right, they're not reenacting battles.
Mm-mm. So I wrote that this was hilarious, but the more I think about it, I'm just like, this isn't so much funny as just like weird. It's very weird. Also, the idea of a clone scuba trooper, I think maybe that's where the hilarity comes in. I'm just imagining Rex like,
it's very specific.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was fine up until like page 212 in the hardcover, where like Leia figures out that her parents' like fancy dinners are actually opportunities for them to like talk to other people who are like-minded and want to fight against the Empire. And coincidentally, she figures this out. Her mom invites Kier to distract her, and Leia suggests that they eavesdrop. And so they go through these like hidden palace tunnels, and they overhear some things like Leia's rights. These aren't just dinner parties. They reconvene, and Kier has a very interesting reaction, I would say. So he says, I wish they'd had this conversation on any other planet. Leia's like, what difference would that make? Which is pretty logical in my opinion. And he turns to her and briefly touches her hand, which I'm just like, you have to realize that your parents being involved puts our entire world at risk, which is fair. But at the same time, like, someone's got to take the risk. And Leia kind of like points that out, like, we have resources, like, we should use these for the greater good. But he is very much attached to Alderaan at this point. It's made very clear.
Yeah, I also, it's probably not something that a regular 16-year-old would be that highly concerned with.
That he loves his planet and he wishes his monarchs weren't talking about open rebellion on it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's just because he's so into the Clone Wars. He's very, like, clued into all of these political elements. But, like, yeah, I don't feel like the typical teenager would be like, I'm very concerned about the fate of my planet and the way that our rulers are approaching things and whether they're going to bring our planet into war.
Yeah, although I guess everyone in the Apprentice legislature is kind of like on another level, essentially. Like, they're not just dealing with like normal teenager stuff. Well, that being said, I guess Stevis, I can never say his first name, which is why I just refer to him as Stevis. There are definitely like partying elements, but these are not the elements that like Leia is involved with.
I mean, the other question is, would he be in the Apprentice legislature if he didn't already think about these things?
That is very true. But I was just like, so basically you'd be fine with another planet taking this risk? Like, it's going to have consequences regardless.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also short-sighted to be like, well, if we just keep Alderaan from getting involved, like, there will be no impact on us. Like, obviously there would be.
Yeah,
maybe exactly. The planet wouldn't get destroyed, but there would be some effect.
Yeah. And then after that, I was waiting for it. And there is, like, as we've alluded to, there's a moment when he and Leia are partnered on this planet, and it's part of their pathfinding group. And they're supposed to ascend to the summit, I believe. And he and Leia make a jump. She makes it, no issue. He doesn't. He still manages to catch a hold, but he, like, disables his field generator. And I feel like we should do another reading here. Well, let me finish, I guess. I should finish the situation. So he disrupts his field generator. Leia recognizes that he's in a precarious position. If he falls, he has no protection. So she makes the calculated decision to jump down, save him, possibly risking her own life, and then, like, launch them in a trajectory that, like, is safe. And she does this, and she does this successfully because of the Force, and it's all good. But then afterwards, he starts yelling at her. So, do you want to be Leia or do you want to be Kier?
What is your preference?
I'll be Kier because I'm yelling right now. Feels like. Why did you do that?
What? Save your life?
That didn't faze me. Yes, and risk your own.
I couldn't let you fall.
You could, and you should, rather than endanger yourself.
His words made no sense. Even if you weren't my friend, I would try to save you just like any other citizen of Alderaan. No, like any other being from anywhere. Except maybe Palpatine. He was long to break his head wide open.
Will you listen to yourself? Kier's hand closed around her arm. It's like you think your own life doesn't belong to you.
She started to protest, but stopped herself, because the first words that came to mind were, "It doesn't."
Kier leaned closer, speaking with an intensity that sent chills through her body. Of course you want to do the right thing. Of course you want to serve the people of Alderaan. Of course you hate, and yeah, of course you hate the Empire, but you don't always have to be selfless. You don't always have to be the one making the sacrifice. This drove me crazy. Absolutely crazy. Like, what kind of person does he think she is that she's just going to walk away from someone who could fall and plummet to his death?
Like, yeah, that is a weird reaction to have, first of all. But second, like, it's difficult because what he's saying is kind of valid. Like, again, I think an issue over the course of Leia's life is that she does actually sacrifice a lot of herself. And again, it's sad, and like there's some advice that she gets in this book that I feel like she doesn't follow. And
how can you follow that upsetting advice? Like, I'm just imagining like me walking away from that situation, and there's no way.
Like, to be clear, no, there's like no way that I or most people would be like, yeah, you could die, like that's fine, it's not my problem.
Yeah, it's exactly. I'm just gonna like, walk I'll away. Just leave
you. Like, no, but the general sentiment, I think, in light of, again, everything that like Leia endures and just her future, she doesn't take that to heart.
No, and I feel like she can't, right? Like, so the rest of the scene is just like, you should think of your own life. You should think of, like, what would happen if you died? Like, what about your parents? And Leia's just like, my parents raised, like, in her head, she's like, my parents raised me to be this way and wouldn't change anything. And I do feel like Bail and Breha would totally understand what she did. Like, if things went really sideways, really south, like, and they fell to their deaths, like, and it was revealed that, like, Leia tried to save him, no one's going to condemn her for that. And, like, she would do it again. Like, and the fact he's manhandling her a little bit just, like, rubs me entirely the wrong way. And I, after that, I was just like, okay, what are you going to do? Let's see.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the fact that Leia, like, takes responsibility for so many things. And maybe that's just partially like my own projection too, but
but at the same time, like, she at least has parents that like are also taking a lot on, right? Like, she's not alone. She's part of a rebellion. Do you have a summation for this? Because like, I'm not gonna be favorable to like, this was
I don't know how much detail we need to go into, but no. Basically Kier had information and he was going to turn them into the Empire because he, in his mind, wanted to save Alderaan.
But we should clarify too that, like, she tells him where she's at inadvertently. He rushes there in, like, a single ship. Like, it's just him on the ship. He collects the information about the Rebel Alliance. And then, because Leia had warned the base, the base self-destructs and his ship is damaged and he's mortally wounded. And she is the last ship to leave. So she finds him, she stays with him, and she goes to him, and he has this information.
Yeah. And then he tries to make her promise that she's going to keep it safe and make sure that it gets to the Empire. And because he's dying, she tells him that she will.
Yeah. And Leia is a much better person than I am. And she recognizes that Kier loved Alderaan more than he hated the Empire. If he had to choose between the rest of the galaxy and his home, he chose his home. It was a choice Leia would never make, but she understood it. And I was like, at this point, I was like, just screaming. And then he makes her do this promise, despite the fact that, like, he knows that her parents are, like, very deeply involved. So basically, he makes her promise to turn evidence that he knows and she knows would destroy her entire family. Still makes her promise it. She does. And she lies. And then he dies.
Yep. So, I mean, I can't really say anything negative about Leia, because obviously she did care about him and was devastated by his dying, especially, like, you can imagine if you were 16 and it was your first boyfriend and he dies, yeah, especially under these circumstances. So I do feel like that explains a lot about how Leia reacts to Han.
Yeah.
And I can totally understand not wanting to be vulnerable and not wanting to get involved with someone, especially because she straight up says that she's not going to get involved with anyone until she's done fighting against the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But again, she's not heeding Holdo's advice to find joy amongst difficult times and to take care of herself and what she wants. Although I guess she does eventually. But, like, it just really highlighted for me that, like, she kind of needed Han. Like,
yeah,
he was what she needed to get her to allow herself to feel that.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like, again, like, the discussion of the timeline, that makes sense, right? Like, she hasn't been, like, not involved with someone for, like, decades or something. Obviously, she's only 19, so she hasn't been 5 decades. But that does, like, I feel like Han, when we read the last shot, that was a piece of her that he, like, didn't understand, right? He always felt like, when we were reading that, he's always the one who's kind of failing her, but, like, he doesn't realize, I don't think, how much she needs him. Like, she's very strong, she's very capable, but, like, they're a good couple together because of this piece. Like, he gets her out of that.
Yeah.
And he doesn't recognize it, which is just, like, and, like, so frustrating. Like, they deserve so much better.
I love Last Shot, but that was really frustrating. It was totally, like, good characterization and good writing. But, yeah, just seeing Han be like, I'm a terrible husband, I'm a terrible father.
Yeah.
Leia doesn't need me, Ben doesn't need me, I'm only going to cause trouble for them and, like, make their lives worse. It's just really hard.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously not true.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, yeah. This does contribute a lot to, like, explaining that, which in turn explains the rest. And then, not to end on a grim note, but totally going to end on a grim note.
Well, the book ends on a grim note.
It so does.
It's not really avoidable.
There's no acknowledgement. So I read the acknowledgements, like, all the time. And not just because my job involves me, like, using the acknowledgements to establish connections between people. Because if you acknowledge your spouse and your children, that is very valuable information. That sounds super creepy, I swear. All right. But anyways, I read them even before them because, like, I like to know, like, you know, oftentimes there's like a playlist or like, you know, this was an inspiration. Thank you so much. Like it's useful information, interesting information, not useful, just interesting. There's no acknowledgments here. It just like ends and that's it. Like there's nothing else after this. There's like two blank pages and that's the book. And the last like sentence is, my parents, Leia thought, my friends, my world, these are things the Empire could never take away.
None of that is true.
Nope. Alderaan is destroyed. Her parents are killed on planet. Her friends die. I mean, Holdo lasts for a good long while. But yeah, this is really grim.
I guess, in a way, the Empire can't take those things away from her because she has had them. Like, she'll always have her time with her parents and her friends and her time growing up on Alderaan. So I guess in that sense, they can't take it away from her. But, like, those things all were physically taken away from her. And, yep. Again, it just reiterates, like, how many things have been taken away from her or that she's lost. And it's depressing.
Which is interesting because when we talk about Leia, like, hope is such a prominent, like, beating over your head theme. And when I think about Leia, like, I don't associate her with tragedy, but there is all this tragedy in her life. Like, if you think about it, yeah, it's pretty brutal. But I guess, yeah. I mean, we talked about this at the top of the episode, right? Like, her defining characteristic is perseverance. She continues going on. And despite all these things happening to her, she is able to continue doing what she does, which is fight. And that's pretty admirable. Maybe that's why I don't consider her to be a tragedy.
It is inspiring. Like, I personally find it to be very inspiring that she does persevere through all that. I just hope that she was taking Holdo's advice sometimes and finding joy in all of it and living in the moment. Let's all take Holdo's advice.
Yeah. And appreciate Amelyn Holdo forever and ever. Peace out.
That is it for today's show. Our intro and outro music is by Lobo Loco, and our segment break music is by Poddington Bear. You can find us at StarWarsSleepover.com, where we have our show notes and links, on Twitter at SWSleepover, and on Instagram at StarWarsSleepover. And if you are a regular listener, please consider subscribing so that you get all of our episodes instantly when they're released. And if you like us, please also consider leaving us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen, because that does help others to find us. We would love feedback about any upcoming topics that you'd like to see or anything else that you'd like to share with us. In the meantime, we will be back in 2 weeks to finally talk about Rebels. So in the meantime, thanks for listening.
And may the Force be with you. Thank you.